Hello and welcome to Source Decode, your magic decodering to demystify the jargon surrounding the technology industry. I'm your host, Ben Coffin, and join me each week as I try to dig into what these buzzwords are all about, how they're being used, and who actually needs them. We're back after a week's hiatus from a winter storm that took out Source Decode headquarters here in Austin, Texas, but we're back with our third and final installment of the Digital Twins Deep Dive here in Season 1. We've taken a look at digital twins in two different primary use cases so far, predicting and modeling networks and simulating and prototyping circuitry. If you've missed either of these episodes, feel free to swing on over to keysight.com/find/sourcedecode to catch up on all things digital twins and listen to the whole series. But this week we move from the stage of the traditional R&D lab to the open road. You've probably heard of the term digital transformation thrown around amidst all the buzzwords in the tech space, but I can't think of an industry more alive with this digital revolution than the automotive industry. Everyone's getting into the electric vehicle market as the automotive supply chain is shifting away from gas vehicles to chase the electric vehicle dream. As part of that, more sensors, more awareness, and more safety features are being built into cars to get closer and closer to that autonomous vehicle future. But how do we close the gap between how we're building and testing cars today and what it'll take to make that electric, autonomous, or driver-assisted future a reality? And most importantly, where do the digital twins fit into this? These were all questions that I had in my mind when I sat down with Dr. Silvio Tuca, who heads up the product management for radar-based autonomous test products at Keysight. We'll be right back with my conversation with Silvio right after this.
Hi there, I'm Daniel Bogdanoff, host of the Keysight podcast, Double E's Talk Tech. Basically, when I'm at the office and overhear an interesting conversation about a new technology spec or application, I rope that person into being on the podcast so you get an insider's look at the latest engineering trends and technologies from the people that are actually defining the specs, like USB, PCIe, 5G, SATCOM, metrology, and I'll even call in an occasional YouTuber friend like Mehdi from Electroboom or Sharier from The Signal Path. I don't care what Ben told you about me, come check out Double E's Talk Tech. That's EES Talk Tech. Wherever you get your podcasts, I have a fresh lineup for 2023 that you won't want to miss.
Thanks, Sylvie, for joining me this morning. So I've been exploring sort of this path of like, what is a digital twin? Trying to get into my head this concept. And I've talked to some folks and I'm starting to get to a place where I like think I understand it, but I wanted to get maybe a little bit deeper into like a pretty concrete example. So as I understand it, there's a lot of this workflow that happens in the autonomous vehicle space. Maybe why don't we kick off with what is drive testing? What's the point of doing drive testing?
That's a good question, Ben. The way we see things, as you know, when we analyze the industry, when we look at automotive industry, there are two main ways of developing the vehicles, and one is the more established version, which is the so-called V model, whereby on the left side of the V, the left arm, as you look at it, is the requirements and the design part, whereby, an OEM, an automaker in the end, will define the car based on a few features, how they want it to be, luxury car, an SUV, sports car, whatever that is. And then they break it down into systems and subsystems and eventually modules. And some of them they develop themselves, some of them they outsource to, for example, tier ones and tier two suppliers down to, especially when we talk about, electronics and the IT environment, they outsource them to chipset manufacturers, for example. And on the right side of the V, you have the testing part, whereby at each level of, design, you need to test and validate whether or not, the component or module or subsystem, what have you, is properly designed and properly working, both, according to the standards and according to the specifications and the requirements set you know, beforehand. And this is one way of testing. And when you look at each of these steps, of course, there's a digital transformation. So a lot of these players on the market prefer to have, you know, outsourced or at least to perform testing on a digital level in software before integrating the components, the modules, the subsystems into bigger systems. Because of course it is more, you know, cost effective.
Yeah, and, of course.
Yeah. Saves them time.
Right. Yeah, trying to test the whole car with and you've never put any of these pieces together before, right? It's not, as much as we like to think it probably goes together like Lego blocks, it realistically there's a lot of steps between having your pieces and having a functioning car.
Obviously. And of course no one wants any surprises. And there's also a second way of doing this, and this is a bit more, I guess, disruptive for the automotive industry, and this is what we see that the sort of new players are doing. And this is not native to automotive. This is coming from sort of the big tech players, you know, that are in the industry. And this comes from, you know, the digital transformation that I spoke about. And this is what they call DevOps, you know, development and operations, whereby this doesn't look like a V. This is like, you know, the sign of infinity, kind of a continuous process whereby on the left side you have, you know, the development part with coding and building, well, starting with planning, you know, and coding and building it and then releasing it. And the right side of this sort of infinity shape talks about deploying it and monitoring, you know, collecting feedback. And right. This can be, you know, can be a simulation, can be something fully digital. And of course, when you talk about, you know, apps or anything like that, it is fully digital. But when you talk about hardware components, you might want to have what we call a digital twin, right? You want to have a copy in software of, you know, the module, the component, the subsystem that you want to release and test it and, you know, try to break it before you release it. Or you have some sort of beta testers that would perform that kind of testing for you.
Yeah, absolutely. The infinity sign makes a lot of sense, because the thing that I've found as I've sort of followed this, what are these digital twins, is that it all of this workflow is cyclical, right? There's a feedback loop associated here that's important in if you just did it, you know, sort of once, okay, that's great. You learned something from it. But to create this something that is actually digital parody of it, you need that sort of feedback loop. And so it's interesting to see how many industries, you know, whether it's the automotive industry, the software industry, the wireless industry is doing this heavily now, where we're starting to see that cyclical design, that sort of continuous integration sort of workflow become constant. It's really interesting.
Of course. And a lot, what I can add is also that, you know, a lot of these features that we see in autonomous driving, as well as in other industries and other segments of the industry, a lot of them are based on software, you know, so they somehow complemented or, you know, commoditized even the hardware pieces, whereby they all run on the same platform, but then they have different features, which, you know, offer different benefits for the end user at the end of the day, based on the firmware or the software model that they run, you know, and or the version. And these can be unlocked, you know, simply by licenses, or they can be, you know, they can be more complex than that.
Yeah, as everything is being demanded of us, of the technology industry to iterate faster and break the next wall of innovation, that sort of workflow of like a commercial platform that is sort of generic and then software implementation, software can iterate so much faster than hardware. So let's go back and take a step back and look at drive testing. Drive testing is we're testing all these different components in the vehicle before we get to the actual vehicle tests themselves. When you know, I'm sure there's a hit, like, as I've been following sort of the track of digital twins, I'm learning that there's sort of a history of, well, we did things one way and now it's evolved and now we're doing digital twins. So in the world of drive testing, what's that difference between sort of the algorithmic training or simulation and now getting into these more advanced digital twins?
Of course, there are multiple components to this as well. You know, when we talk about drive testing, that can be, if we talk about the V model, that can be at the end of the V and on the right-hand side on the top, there where you integrate all the subsystems into a vehicle. And then, first of all, you take it probably on a test track and you monitor the features that you're interested in. And after that, obviously, before, you know, taking to the end product to the public roads, you have to have it homologated by certain, you know, governmental bodies or standards organizations. But when we talk about, you know, the test track, there might be even some steps in there whereby, you know, for example, we've heard companies that perform some sort of, they have a model or a sort of a golden standard of a certain feature. And they have, for example, in these concept cars, they do have twin systems on board whereby, for example, they have the steering system, which is the one under test, and they have the golden standard. And they perform a few laps on the test track, and then they measure the, you know, they compare, they benchmark the two systems. So that's one way to perform the drive test, you know, with the real component. But obviously they develop more and more complex and, you know, finely tuned models in software, which means that, first of all, they have, you know, they define it in software. They have an ideal sort of almost like a black box replica of the real system. And then they add all sorts of noise and all sorts of inputs to it so that it is more and more realistic, you know. Mm-hmm. And this is a way of testing, which is much cheaper and much more cost effective before getting on the road.
Yeah, and that addition of noise, I know at Keysight you're working on something called a radar scene emulator, which is emulating a real world environment for radar sensors to see. For that noise part of things, like the impairments, how important is it that we characterize the bad? You know, when I think about test equipment, I always think that it's like, oh, this guy has to be this like very perfect system that has no noise, has no contribution of error, because we're trying to get such a perfect result and measurement out of a device. Where does the kind of impairment testing part of thing come in?
Yeah, this is a really important question. And, you know, in test and measurement industry, probably noise is the second term that we learn, you know, because you have ideal systems and then you have noise on top, which disturbs everything. You know, the idea for the radar scene emulator started with, you know, just emulating or simulating, even before that, targets for radar sensors. And that's one way of testing, you know, the functionality of a radar module, which means you have the radar module, which is under test, and you want to, instead of taking it on the road or, you know, having people or, you know, any sort of obstacles, cars, bikes, pedestrians, move in front of the radar, you want to perform this in a much more reduced footprint in the lab.
Right.
And you simulate targets by means of, you know, radio frequency echoes to this target, and you simulate distance, velocity, and the size of the target. But with current technology, you could only do, you know, you could only simulate a few targets, 2, 3, 4, something like this, which is very limited. You know, modern radar units can detect tens or hundreds of, you know, objects on the road simultaneously. So you want to kind of push the boundaries of this sort of testing, and also don't want only to simulate targets. You want to simulate, you know, the side of the road, the guardrails, the signposts, maybe the trees, also weather conditions, you know, whether it's fog or heavy rain or snow, anything like that, to see, basically to check how the radar unit behaves under all these conditions. And then we had customers come to us say, can we inject interference on top of this? You know, can we inject, because just below and just above the frequency band where, you know, radar module operates, 76 to 81 gigahertz, there's the 5G backhaul,
yep,
which can easily interfere with that. And then there are a ton of radar modules on the road, you know, from other cars, so they can interfere with each other.
Right.
And we thought of, okay, we can inject signals from something like an arbitrary waveform generator into one of these, you know, target simulators and add on top. But that can only scale up to the number of targets that we have, which I mentioned, 3 or 4. And then we presented this idea internally and we discussed it and we took it to very smart people that we have in Keysight Labs, you know, super smart PhDs in RF and physics. And they thought about it and they said, oh, there are ways around this. And, you know, they took this idea and developed the radar scene emulator, you know, which is took the whole idea of a target simulator, which simulates, as I said, distance, velocity, and size. And they shrunk it down from, you know, the size of a desktop PC kind of thing to the size of a USB key, you know, like a thumb drive kind of thing. And they stuck 8 of these on one card and then 64 of these cards next to each other to create this matrix or array, you know, of miniature target simulators, individual ones, which are arranged as a kind of a half circle in front of the radar on the test, you know. So basically they create the screen.
Right. Oh yeah. So they're creating it's almost like virtual reality for the radar.
Exactly. Yep. One of the guys in lab said this is VR goggles for the radar unit. So you basically immerse, you take the radar unit and you put it in this scenario. You know, you have a scenario around it and then you simulate everything around it with up to 512 simultaneous objects, which is much more realistic you know, than what has been done before.
So if the radar scene emulator is such a cool piece of equipment, and I've worked in the automotive radar space before in the past, just knowing what I know about the space, I was like, I saw this, I was like, this is very cool. Not to toot our own horn at Keysight. I know we're two Keysight people talking about how great the Keysight product is, but let me take another spin on it. So we, you know, drive test. I think you hit on something where, hey, we got to test walking pedestrians or other cars or bikes in front of the vehicle before we put it on the road, right? Even if we're going to do, you know, I remember seeing like all the crash test dummy footage of like of seeing all the different, you know, ways we would test vehicles just like flying at 50 miles an hour and then just hitting something and seeing what happens. You know, we're past that, it feels like, or at least for the majority, we're past that. We're into this digital world. But how do you actually get to the point where like where do you start on developing those scenarios? Like, you know, I can think of when I pull out of my driveway and I head to the grocery store, I pass probably like, you know, between cars, people, dogs on the street, houses, fences, trees, you know, I'm passing all these different spaces, but that's just my personal drive to the grocery store, you know. How do you actually like start designing a world, let's say, for the radar to be tested in so that it's prepared properly? Like, where does that come from?
Yeah, well, you know, as the saying goes, every 1,000-mile journey starts with a step, right? There are these standardized tests, like the ones that you mentioned with crash test dummies. They're called NCAP or New Car Assessment Programs. And they're slightly different in each region, you know, in the Americas, in Europe, in Asia. But there's the majority of the tests are similar. Probably, you know, the parameters vary to a certain extent, but they're testing basically the same things. And that's safety. Safety for the driver, safety for the passenger, and safety for the other traffic participants like pedestrians and bikers around. So these are standardized, and these can be and have been for a while now replicated in software. So there are companies that produce, they are software developers for these kind of simulation software. And they have packages for NCAP scenarios for each of their regions. And each developer of an autonomous driving function, you know, for example, the autonomous emergency brakes or lane keep assistance or automatic cruise control, if you want to test any of these, you might want to test them for NCAP before. You want to run them in software, mm-hmm. and design everything in your software environment and run it there with, and you can iteratively check, you know, the parameters vary the vehicle that you're testing, right? So for example, you can specify the weight of the vehicle, whether, you know, it's you have only one passenger or you have a car full of people. Mm-hmm. You can vary a lot of parameters for the vehicle itself, and then you can vary also the surrounding environment, so the sort of the universe around it,
right?
And then you run this simulation.
Yeah, I shouldn't be surprised that there are these companies that exist that are these standards bodies. Right? Every conversation I have about one of these technologies, and I'm starting to dig into it. You know, I was talking to one of the previous guests about artificial intelligence, and I was asking about how scared should we be about artificial intelligence? And the answer was, well, there are standards that help us keep all this stuff in check. And so I think that's maybe one of the things that gets hidden behind, I don't know. I don't know if your average person thinks about that there are standards bodies that are governing or figuring out these things and making sure that we adhere to these things. So I shouldn't be surprised to hear that that's part of it.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting space and an interesting discussion to be had. Of course, I have listened to a talk a few days ago at MIT, mm-hmm. and recorded on YouTube, obviously. And it is about 2.5 or 3 years old now, so some things might have changed, but they were talking about the alignment between the OEMs, you know, the automakers, and mm-hmm. the public out there. And so far, you know, before the AI and the machine learning algorithms have been developed or, you know, even deployed, and they are almost ubiquitous in certain industries nowadays, these two were fairly aligned, right? So none mm-hmm. of them wanted any casualties on the road. And the idea was to you know, reduce injuries and accidents. But with, you know, developing machine learning, these algorithms can do things that the developer doesn't know, they're not aware of.
Right.
So yep. So they might have a different incentive. And I'm not trying to say that they, of course, want to kill people, but, you know, it depends on how the algorithm is developed and how, you know, what biases are injected into it, whether, you know, like you have the so-called trolley problem, mm-hmm. you know, whereby the cart can be you know, steered to one or another
yep.
part of the right. rail, injuring more or less people or none, or and how would, you know, the algorithm behave, whether it can or not injure, you know, the driver or the passengers of the car or the pedestrians. And it might choose. And these are obviously corner cases, and there's still a long way to getting there, but people need to think about this.
Right. Right. Yeah. And the it's interesting because we think about, as we sort of do machine driven and machine informed, whether it's testing or actual programming of a device or all of these things, that's one of the things that we have to think about, you know, making sure functions properly, is this decision making, how it prioritizes and what you're sacrificing. I think that's part of the role of test. And I see this, you know, I work in the wireless space here at Keysight, and I see this in the wireless side a lot, where we're trying to figure out, okay, we're trying to optimize our wireless network, and we can throw machine learning at the problem, but then what did we give up in order to get an optimization? It's not always, you know, you throw, like, a supercomputer brain can solve the problem and find that sweet spot of optimization that a human never found. it'll come at a cost of something. And so it's interesting. And I think this reinforces the importance, if we zoom back out to, you know, the idea we're talking about here of drive testing, like that's where drive testing is super important, that being able to test these AIs that are going to make decisions, that are going to have to figure out difficult things, figuring out what, you know, giving them the whole gamut of scenarios in which they have to make hard decisions, exactly, gives us more ability to trust those systems when we deploy them.
Exactly. And I mentioned before that, you know, these developers, the autonomous driving features developers, start with testing the NCAP scenarios in the lab, in software. And then they move on. They did ask us when we have these conversations, and sometimes, you know, these simulation software vendors are on the line too. We talk about day two cases or, you know, corner cases in the end. And for example, there are some customers that came to us and said, oh, do you know that tunnel in Paris, which is really low, really old tunnel, and it's, you know, lined with corrugated metal. And there's always problems for radars whenever they are deployed in there, because they can never detect whether in front of them is a tall bus or it's, you know, the
right,
the ceiling of the tunnel seen at the horizon. So these kind of scenarios need to be replicated in software before deploying car on the road, because no two roads look the same, especially in an urban environment.
No, absolutely. I mean, I can think of, it's funny you say that. You got me thinking about like what's some of the craziest roads I've driven on. I lived in the UK for a brief moment, and I went, you know, I was getting acclimated to roundabouts, and then I found myself on something called the Magic Roundabout in Swindon in the UK. And it's basically five roundabouts that feed into a bigger roundabout going in reverse direction. And I'm like, how does a car, I can't figure this out. I don't know how a car, like, if you've never seen that before, that seems like a drive test scenario. So yeah, these complicated extremes, whether it's interference or just humans built something absolutely wacky or any of those things, like it makes a ton of sense. I'll wrap up with, you hinted at safety earlier as the reason we're doing this, right? Like the advantage is, you know, pretty clear. The more we test, the more we can provide a real environment, the more these systems are safe for the end user. You know what, as we continue to iterate on these digital twins, these software informed systems, you know, how does that continue to trickle down to the everyday person, the person just going out and buying a car that's going to benefit from this? What is it that they see that changes?
Well, the idea that we want to, so what we want to do here in Keysight, and especially with in automotive and with the RSC, with the radar scene emulator, is, mm-hmm, we want to give, first of all, the OEMs and the tier ones, basically anyone who develops radar-based autonomous driving functions, another set of tools to verify and validate their products, their developments, before deploying them on the road. Mm-hmm. So by no means do we even want to pretend that we're, you know, replacing any sort of simulation sort of testing or on the road testing. We, mm-hmm, just want to add one extra level of safety, one extra level of confidence that, mm-hmm, whoever is, you know, in charge of signing off on those functions before they get to the road, they get implemented in vehicles, and either you purchase that vehicle or you take a ride with a ride sharing company, mm-hmm, you feel safe about that. You know, you might get a message when you check your phone that, you know, the ride sharing company that will take your ride is using an autonomous vehicle, and
right,
you want to be fully safe and comfortable using that service. Mm-hmm. So this is what we mean to do here.
Yeah. It's trust, right? At the end of the day, it's it's kind of like getting on a roller coaster, right? It seems scary. It's built to look scary, but at the end of the day, a whole bunch of engineers spend a lot of time figuring out how to make sure that that car never leaves that track. And that's the whole point. So it's that times a trillion. So
exactly. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, great. Sylvie, thank you so much for chatting with me. I'm, you know, it's really interesting to hear how these digital twins get applied in different spaces. I've talked to folks from the sort of circuit design world to the wireless network world, and now hearing it from the automotive side, you know, I feel like I can start to piece together what the digital twin looks like. So thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
Thank you, Ben. It was a pleasure.
Well, software sure seems like it's here to stay, huh? When I talked with these experts in the first three episodes of this season about artificial intelligence, I saw a lot of traditional software development ideologies trickling down into these worlds that have been traditionally hardware-focused. You know, my conversation with Sarah LaSelva about wireless networks, especially, that's an industry that has for a very long time been very hardware-based, now shifting to a software model. When I think about the automotive industry, I don't know if I can think of a more hardware-centric industry, even though I know all of these vehicles have more and more software in them every day. But it's not about the software in the cars themselves, it's about the workflow. The digital twin development process fundamentally changes the workflow of developing hardware systems and changes from this pass-fail methodology to a workflow that's about iterative optimization to get one solid result the first time around. What Sylvie talked about with drive testing is the perfect example of this. What if instead of spending time, money, engineering resources in drive test after drive test after drive test, you could instead run millions of drive tests in a software environment so realistic that the device under test couldn't tell the difference? It's efficiency gains like that that make digital twins a buzzword. It's attracting hype because of what it can make possible. All right, well, that's it for this episode of Source to Code. We'll be back next week moving out of the digital twins world and jumping into the world of big data, where we'll dig into a bit more of the automotive industry, as well as data coming from manufacturing and the software development process, and what all that data is good for. If you enjoyed this week's dive into digital twins and still want to do more decoding yourself, head over to keysight.com/find/source-decode and find this week's companion piece, Evolving Your ADAS and AV Tests with Emulation Capability. This white paper will dive into how the software workflow is changing for the automotive industry and how validation testing can take from DevOps models to change up the automotive development cycle. Now, while you're over on keysight.com, you can also join our mailing list where you can be entered for a chance to win a Source to Code hoodie and get additional content and a full digest of all things Source to Code in one place. And lastly, if you're taking something away from this show and you're having fun decoding these buzzwords, share the podcast with a friend. Recommendations help the show grow and help tell us that you want more episodes. Thanks again to Dr. Sylvie Utuca for coming on the show. Drive testing and radar emulation is such a cool topic. I got to work in a former life, so it was great to hear how it's changing and where the automotive world is headed. Until next time, I'm Ben Coffin, and this has been Source Decode.